In the early 70s, we got the Anglo-Australian Telescope. It's sighting Spring Mountain in New South Wales. 40 years later, we have what? Well, possibly not much. This is Peter Quinn from the University of Western Australia.
All of astronomy goes through these revolutions in technology and changes where you build a new generation of facilities. So optical astronomy went from the age of the AAT, the 4-metre telescopes, and there were a number of them around the world, to the 8-metre telescopes and the 10-metre telescopes. And that transition happened in the early 1980s, and by the 1990s it was well on its way. Australia had the 4-metre telescopes, and it's astronomers who are aspiring to the 8 and 10-metre telescope class astronomy. The Americans did it. They built the Keck telescope in Hawaii, which was very much a private facility of the University of California. The Europeans realised that they were behind the Americans in many ways and decided to outdo them in some sense and build the world's largest facility in Chile. So that was 8-metre telescopes, 4 8-metre telescopes, and they were commissioned in the late 1990s, early 2000s, called the VLT. So I was fortunate enough to work on the VLT project. I worked for ESO for 11 years and helped build that facility.
That's the European space.
European Southern Observatory, who built the VLT array, €1 billion worth of telescopes on the northern part of Chile. So Australia had some chances to actually join that group of nations and give Australian astronomers access to that very large facility. Unfortunately, we couldn't quite raise the money or the will or both at the time. And so Australia kind of missed that boat. And it's been trying to catch up ever since to find ways of accessing these 8 and 10 metre telescopes. And various universities have done it individually. But in general, Australia as a community has not had good access to this, what is now actually the workhorse class of optical astronomy and infrared astronomy is these 8 to 10 metre telescopes, just like the workhorse was at the 4-metre level, at the AAT level, in the 1970s. And thereby, Australian astronomy is not perhaps being as successful in optical and infrared as it could be if it had more access to these kinds of facilities. Right now, the next generational change is being planned in optical telescopes. So we're now talking about 30 and 40 and even larger in diameter. So this is a big transition, a big step up, factors of 10. There are two big schools building these telescopes. Again, the US are building two projects in the United States, one in Hawaii and one facility in Chile. And the Europeans are building another large facility in Chile. Australia stands some chance of missing out again on these projects unless it has ways of joining those clubs, joining the clubs of the people who are building these large telescopes. There's a little bit of access to one of the American clubs, but I think the community of Australian astronomers feels that ESO, the European Southern Observatory, that suite of instruments, both the workhorse instruments, and they actually have radio telescopes too, and this new generation of optical telescopes, represents a fantastic opportunity to grow our community into the future, to stop missing the boat in some sense, but join it. Now, it's very expensive. It takes a lot of political and economic will and energy to do that, but I think the Australian community, as part of their thinking about this decadal plan period we're in right now, want to think about that future.
So that good news is we might be there in the club. What if we're not?
I think there'd be fairly serious consequences for Australian astronomy. I think that these big telescopes are not only instruments for doing science, they're also innovative instruments for new technologies and new mathematics and new data and large data and all the other things which go around doing astronomy. And so Australia misses out on first-hand opportunities to get involved with those things. So I think it'd be a real disaster, to be honest with you, if we don't have a significant involvement with one of these large projects. Particularly, as I said, I think ESO represents the most attractive option because it presents facilities on many fronts, these workhorse instruments, these future large telescopes, and also, as I said, some radio telescopes as well.
Are you getting helpful smiles from ministers at all?
Look, I think the government, both past and present, have been very supportive of astronomy as an Australian science because it's historically done extremely well. It's something we should be proud of in Australia. And I think the government has recognised that through the funding of things like the AAO and also more recently, of course, the SKA. So these are things that Australia sees as beneficial to the community, as strengths of the community, and things we can basically go forward with. So I think the government in general has been supportive because of the collateral benefits as well as the scientific benefits, but I think they're going to require a lot of convincing to come up with the funds to push us into this next domain.
Square kilometre array, what stage? That's, talking about 15 years off, before it's fully working, isn't it? So what's underway so far?
So the Square Kilometre Array is one of these transformational instruments, a generational change for the radio astronomy world, just like these optical telescopes were generational change. Just to put it in some perspective, large telescopes, the optical telescopes we're building now, these 30 and 40 metre telescopes, are factors of 10 and 20 larger and more capable than the ones we currently have today. The SKA represents a factor of 10,000 increasing capabilities over what we currently have in the radio astronomy domain. So it's a transformational change. It's not just a simple generational change, it's a transformational change in what we're doing. The SKA at the moment is in the process of being designed. So that runs from basically last year through to about 2017. 2017, we expect to see the tenders put out for the start of construction on both sites in Southern Africa and also in Western Australia. 2018, the first construction will really start based on what's already there. Over the last few years, we've been putting in place observatory sites both in South Africa and Australia. There are precursor instruments on both sites. We will reuse some of that, but we'll also build much, much more. So the first phase of construction of the SKA will start in 2018. We hope to see some early science results probably 2020, 2021. And that will be only, that first phase of building, which should be finished by about 2022, will only be about 10% of the entire SKA. That's the first phase of construction. Then the following 90% will start around 2021, 22 and go on probably to 25, 26, somewhere in that domain.
You've already got some sort of computer power set up, haven't you, in the West?
Right. We've been very fortunate as part of the build-up of resources in Australia for the SKA is the creation of the PAWSE Centre. So the PAWSE Centre is a supercomputer facility built here in Perth. It's top 20 sort of facilities in the world. It's a couple of petaflops in the geek speak.
That's huge.
That's huge, yes indeed. So it's a significant computer centre, and it's going to serve the needs of radio astronomy and some geosciences as well for this first pre-construction phase for the precursor experiments. As soon as SKA-1 comes online, we'll need a facility probably 10 times bigger. So it's SKA in general is the world's largest producer of data, bar none. We're talking about exabytes of data. So that's a billion bytes. That's about the same data volume as the entire Earth produces per year the SKA will produce in one day.
You're kidding.
Yes. So it's staggering, and it's exciting as well as being staggering. And this excitement spreads. So the excitement spreads to the scientific community with the opportunities that that brings for science, but also it spreads to the international ICT, information technology community. They're excited about trying to meet that challenge because it truly is a challenge which is Google class. You know, scientists haven't actually had to deal with these kind of Google class challenges before, and how are we going to deal with it, right? So it's we have to talk to the people at Google and talk to the Amazon and talk to the companies who are learning how to deal with these data volumes, and we need to inform them about what we're doing, and we need to have a dialogue with them over this.
In fact, the Vice-Chancellor of this University of Western Australia, talks about perhaps the state being a centre for big data construction.
I would completely agree. In Western Australia, we have two opportunities. We have the SKA, which is coming with an enormous amount of data for doing science, and it's the volumes are unprecedented. They're exascale. Also in this state, we have a resources industry, a resources and energy industry, which is also generating significant and comparable amounts of data. So two of the biggest producers of data in the world are both here in Perth. So we've got a double barrel opportunity here in Perth to actually maybe even merge and join those interests together to actually leverage off each other. SKA will be a catalyst for new algorithms, new technologies, new architectures for computing, and that's of benefit to everybody who has big data, and vice versa. The geoscientist guys, when they explore the Earth, they've got a big chunk of rock. And in that big chunk of rock, they're looking for something very small and very precious. Astronomers do the same thing. We've got a big chunk of sky, and in it we're looking for things which are small and precious.
So when it takes off, who knows what you'll find?
Who knows what we'll find, exactly. But it's not just a story. The similarities are actually quite close, and so there is a synergy there between the two kinds of discipline that we can hope to employ. And as I said, I think you're right. I think we, and the Vice-Chancellor's right, I think there is an enormous opportunity here, particularly in Western Australia, to leverage both of these interests together and make Western Australia a great centre for data science and big data studies on all sorts of ways.
A state of excitement, but still questions about Australia's joining the big league of optical astronomy. Professor Peter Quinn is director of the International Centre for Radio Astronomy at the University of Western Australia.